Good morning, colleagues. Thank you for joining us this morning. With me is the leadership of National Treasury. This is now an opportunity for us to engage with you on the medium-term budget policy. I'm now going to hand over to the Minister of Finance just to make opening remarks. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Kio. On my right, not ideological, Akokiemusonda. On my left, not ideological. I've got Diane Sarufet, the Commissioner of SARS and the Governor of the South African Reserve Bank. Or my extreme left, I doubt if we ideologically at the extreme left, but this is my extreme left with the purpose of sitting today, is the Director General of National Treasury, Dr. Dangan Peterson. Diane Sarupen will read the key messages, and then we take the questions. But welcome, all of you. We always keep time. What time is it? Already, we've not up us yet, and we're here. We always keep time. Diane?
Thank you very much, Minister of Finance. Good afternoon, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. So the key messages for the 2025 MTVPS are as follows. Firstly, the economic outlook is improving slowly as reforms gain traction. Our economic reforms are making steady progress. Government is meeting its fiscal targets, and macroeconomic stability is being strengthened. South Africa needs a fast-growing economy that attracts investment and creates jobs, supported by a capable and ethical public service. Economic growth is projected to average 1.8% annually over the next 3 years. This moderate improvement reflects the tangible progress and pace of reforms, and the reliability of Eskom's power has improved dramatically, providing certainty for homes and businesses. Transnet has stabilized freight rail and port volumes and simplified visa applications, and making it easier to attract skills and increase tourism. The second key message is that speeding up the implementation of our reforms will accelerate growth and investment. While Transnet's rail performance has improved, its volumes remain below target. Swifter action will provide a boost to investor confidence and private investment in rail. In electricity, a combination of operational and administrative delays within Eskom and the National Transmission Company of South Africa, along with lags of the regulator, have prevented some projects and investments from getting underway at the speed we would like. Government is front-loading infrastructure investment, however, and over the next 3 years, more than 1 trillion is set aside for investment in infrastructure. These investments will boost economic output, create jobs, and lower the cost of doing business. And complementary reforms are underway to mobilize private sector financing and improve the public sector's ability to finance and build capital projects. Thirdly, government is staying the fiscal course, stabilizing debt, and building sustainable public finances. Healthier public finances benefit South Africa now and in the future. They create better investment conditions, they reduce borrowing costs, and they free up public money that is currently consumed by debt service payments. Fiscal discipline builds credibility. Even in a low-growth environment, we remain on track to meet our key fiscal targets, with the 2025/6 outcomes improved from the 2025 budget estimates. The debt-to-GDP ratio will stabilize this year, fiscal year 2025/6, arresting the long climb in debt trajectory that began in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. Our primary fiscal surplus grows over the next 3 years, reducing the debt-to-GDP ratio and easing debt service costs, which now absorbs 21 cents of every rand in revenue. The budget deficit is set to narrow from over 4% currently to 3.6% by 2027/8, enabling South Africa to live within its means and restore our fiscal balance. And spending is shifting from consumption towards investment in growth-enhancing assets. Over the medium term, the public service wage bill increases by a nominal annual percent average of 4.1%, while capital payments, mainly for infrastructure, grow by 7.3%. Fourthly, strong fiscal and monetary policy coordination is paying off. Consistent fiscal discipline is getting results. Since January, South Africa's country risk premium and borrowing costs have been declining, supporting households and businesses. Sound monetary policy has reduced both inflation and inflation expectations, benefiting poor South Africans who are most harmed by rising prices. Inflation is currently lower than forecast at the time of the 2025 main budget. To reinforce these positive outcomes, the Minister of Finance, in his speech this afternoon, will announce a new inflation target of 3% with a 1 percentage point tolerance band to accommodate nominal economic fluctuations. By anchoring expectations at this lower level, the revised target will lower the cost of living while boosting competitiveness and investor confidence, reducing long-term borrowing costs, and preserving the real value of social spending. The shorter-term fiscal costs of a lower target, lower nominal GDP and revenue growth, make achieving fiscal targets more challenging, yet the long-term benefits of taking this step far outweigh the costs. A whole-of-government effort to strengthen South Africa's anti-money laundering regime culminated in the country's removal from the Financial Action Task Force grey list in October 2025. This will support investment and reduce both transaction and borrowing costs. Fifthly, medium-term spending continues to protect the social wage, and consolidated spending is expected to grow at an average annual rate of 3.6% from 2.59 trillion in the current fiscal year 2025/6 to 2.8 trillion in 2028/9. In real terms, expenditure grows by an average annual average of 0.2%, protecting per capita public spending and balancing fiscal consolidation with sustainable service delivery. The social wage continues to make up the lion's share of our three-year expenditure envelope, with about 60% of spending directed to health, education, social protection, community development, and employment programs. Lastly, many reforms are underway through the budget process to improve performance value for money and public engagement. Medium-term savings of 6.7 billion rand are proposed by scaling down underperforming programs and taking other measures identified by the Targeted and Responsible Savings Initiative. As reforms gather pace, low-performing and duplicated programs will be identified for closure. As part of rooting out corruption and inefficiency, a ghost work audit has begun to identify a number of fictitious or inactive individuals and payment irregularities. And in 2026, the National Treasury will launch a multi-year fiscal literacy campaign. This initiative will build public understanding of and engagement with the opportunities and risks we face as a country and managing spending and revenue. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, DM. Colleagues, we're now going to be taking questions. We'll do them in a set of two. We'll take the first one from Cape Town up until 12 o'clock, and then we'll cross over to Pretoria. All right? I'm already seeing hands. So I'm going to start with the first row, the second row. So I'm going to take a set of five. You are number one, number two, number three, number four, and number five is clear. Thanks. That's the first round.
Good morning, Linda Inswickers is there. Governor, you wouldn't mind just commenting on the achievement of your long-term goal of a 3% inflation target, please.
Number two.
Morning, my name is Thembi Legwede with Bloomberg News. Minister, I'm just wondering about the placement of the very strong statements about the claims of a white genocide in South Africa, why you felt the need to make these remarks at the beginning of the statement at this time. Thank you.
Hi, it's William from News24. My question's for the Commissioner. Commissioner, could you, I think the best way to phrase it is to ask for expression of your confidence that SARS will make progress in collecting debt since ICD gets linked to future tax increases that are being announced. And as that's tacked onto that is in your views, the debt pile continuing to increase at this stage, or is there any progress being made in cutting it?
Carol?
Good morning, Minister, and everyone else. When I asked, I mean, I saw that the policy statement says that the 3% target will lead to more interest rate cuts in the short term than a 4.5% target would. Could you please explain that? When I asked that in the technical briefing, I was asked to look at the SARB's modeling. But I'd like to hear from the Treasury, please. And then I have a question for the Governor and the Commissioner. The new requirements regarding the payment of dividends to non-South Africans. What is the reason for making this change at this point, especially as we come off the grey list? And to the commissioner, have you got the capacity to supply every person who is due a dividend, who is not living in the country, with a manual tax compliance certificate? Thanks.
Thank you, Clay.
Thank you. I want to know what changed in the last few months that enabled the minister to endorse the 3% inflation target, and what the implications are for the Saab of the National Treasury having joined it in this endeavor. Do you feel vindicated, Governor, at having jumped the gun? Something brought you took a lot flat.
Thank you. Over to you, Minister.
The first question was to the Governor.
Yes, by Linda Hanson.
Thank you very much. It's not my target. It's the country's target. The minister and I have agreed on an inflation target of 3%. And 3% is in line with our peers. It is something that the Treasury and the Reserve Bank had studied comprehensively for a period of time. And we had come to the point where we could make decisions. There is no such thing as a costless policy. Every policy has got trade-offs. And what is important is that the benefits outweigh the costs, and hence our ability to move on this. When we look at our current inflation target band, it was wide, it was too high. This move is about taking it closer to where our peers are. And whilst we are at that, I think that was a question, do you feel vindicated? There's no vindication. Only one winner here today is the South Africans, who are now going to enjoy a low inflation economy, which would mean that the consideration about inflation is taken out of the decision-making process of investors and out of the purchasing decisions of our price centers. But Carol, you almost want to put the Treasury in trouble here, asking them their views about interest rates. And let me help you by answering that, so that you don't ask me about the deficit. So the quarterly projection model showed at the previous Monetary Policy Committee meeting that over the next 2 years, the policy path is such that there would be 5 interest rate cuts of 25 basis points each. The timing of those cuts is a decision that the MPC has to make, taking cognizance of data and the outlook for both inflation and growth, and that from meeting to meeting, after considering those, we will then calibrate policy accordingly. So it is a policy path. It is a model-generated path. We do not outsource our decisions to a model, and we consider data from meeting to meeting and make appropriate policy decision in that respect. Thank you.
Krishna. Thanks, Minister. Just before I get to the debt specific, to say that our debt as it's in our collections in September, as the tables will show, is up 9.3% in a GDP environment that has been readjusted down from 6.3 to 5.3. It does mean that revenue collection is harder. The 18 billion that's above what was in printed estimate, half of that has come from some higher than expected economic performance, specifically in some of corporate activities, as well as in some of the domestic VAT, which is a reflection of some consumption. The other half, or 9.5 billion of that, is from compliance effort, straight from compliance effort, in year compliance effort. So if you look at the 18 billion above trimit estimate, half of that is compliance effort and half of that is economic. But overall, the compliance revenue year on year has grown by almost 14%. And traditionally, the second half is always better than the first half of the year. Specifically in the debt project, you recall that the second cohort that relates to the additional money that the minister approved for us, in the first month of the year, we didn't have the contribution of that money, but slowly we started building up resources to collect that. So we do expect that in the second half of the year, we'd reported 47 billion in the first half of the year, but that probably is more 4 months rather than 6 months at full speed. Our latest estimate, if we add in October, we are now standing at about 57 billion. So we see October is higher than the average 6 months before that, and we expect that that will grow. So are we confident? I think that we've made a commitment that just from the project, we will deliver an additional 20 billion. And we certainly have the workload and are building up the capacity to deliver on that. What is happening, though, is the universe of debt is more complex. So a lot of the low-hanging fruit, which requires just a phone call, a little bit of rattling the cage for the debt to be collected, now requires more tougher legal engagement, such as civil judgments, issues, letters of demand, threatening attachment of assets to secure the debt, but also having to resolve higher levels of complex disputes. So it will become harder, but we do believe that the opportunity landscape will still allow us to collect the debt, naturally dependent on our capacity. But it is harder. On the capacity to supply tax compliance and FIAs, it really depends if it's a normal tax clearance status certificate. That process is largely automated, and taxpayers who apply for it will be issued with a PIN online, they can use that PIN and make it available to ever. For offshore transfers that require SARS approval, it really depends on the complexity of the case. Where it's a straightforward case, it's a matter of days. But sometimes, depending on the current level of compliance by a taxpayer, particularly the wealthy taxpayers who may have complex sets of arrangements, we start by doing a desktop audit just to make sure that all things are in order. It requires sometimes an engagement between us and the taxpayers to address compliance deficiencies. And sometimes taxpayers aren't always helpful, so FIAs can take much longer, and depending on the level of compliance inadequacy.
I think the two questions, Cleo, is the genocide issue and endorsement. I think genocide issue need to be taken in proper context. I did insert that out of, I make reference to particular patriots, African patriots who have said, not in our name. I think it's an act of patriotism which needs attention by all South Africans who love this country. Because they are not saying South Africa is a very good country, a nice country, said we have challenges. But those challenges need, complex as they are, need to be attended by two South Africans. But we refuse to be characterized as part of those Africaners who characterize South Africa as a genocide. I think that was an act of patriotism. It's quite important for me to highlight that. The second set of issues is, why have I endorsed? Let me start by saying, when I delivered the vote 8, not the budget of the country, vote 8, the budget of the department, departmental board, I said, lower inflation is good for the country. And I still say so today. The statement I issued was a statement that did not say I don't endorse. It says I've got no plans to be making it today. I had no plans at the time because we have what is called the macro standing committee between ourselves and SAR, whose main function is to assist coordinating particularly this work. And after a report by that committee giving us the pros and cons, we have to then weigh why then, as the governor says, what is in the interest of the country in the light of circumstances? Are the short-term cost, which you will see when people ask you about the fiscal side of things, which we see some short-term cost, are they not outweighed by the long-term benefits? And in taking that into account, we decided that we must agree with the governor that we needed and agree on this 3%. And of course, we've got to take into account the fluctuations and there may be shocks, smaller shocks or anything in the economy. It may not necessarily be a linear at 3%. There may be some deviations, which we say those deviations may be 1% in point on each side. So that's what guided us. And we're quite confident that the analysis that has been done, which is a joint analysis of the summit, the Treasury did its own work. And those two, that committee reported it, agreed on a joint approach to it. And in the light of that, we have said we must go. And we should not even postpone it to wait for February. We must do it now. Anything else?
No, that's okay, Risa. I'm now going to go for the second round. Tamwa, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I'm Tamwa Khan, Business Day. My first question is to the minister. The medical scheme industry has been calling up for you to clarify yours and Treasury's position on medical tax credits, in light of the comments that the health department recently made to Parliament saying that the MP they could or should be phased out imminently. And secondly, also to you, please, Minister, could you just say a little bit more about the procurement dashboard? What are your expectations? What kind of information will it contain? And would it be sufficiently detailed to expose the kind of corruption that we've seen laid bare at Tembisa Hospital, for example? Thank you.
Thank you, Tari, as Business Day. My first question is to Cheji. Specifically looking at chapter 2 on the expenditure of priorities, you state that there's close to 9,000 high-risk cases of ghost workers that you've identified in the government. Do we have an initial estimate about how much money has been lost to these subsequent ghost worker cases? You also put in the state that they will be followed by appropriate legal action. Does Treasury have a dedicated plan to recuperate any of the money lost to the subsequent ghost workers? And then my second question is to Deputy Minister Sarah Benn. You stated initially that even in a low-gear environment, DEC will stabilize. What do you attribute this low-gear environment in the current fiscal situation? Also, that I hear could you. Well, thank you.
Lefebvre?
The only timber from Independent Media. Just firstly to start off, you did say that in the Mitabaxi policy statement that there's been, for the first time in 2024, first time in a decade, Eskom reported a profit. How are you feeling financially about how things are going with Eskom, especially given the Shamba 4 municipal areas as well? Also to the minister, you said 1.6 billion has been set aside mostly for disaster relief and funding for the Matanga Commission. You just give a breakdown of how much specifically is for the Matanga Commission and then also how much money is going towards the National Dialogue as well. And then just lastly, I see you extended the SRD grant for another year. How are efforts going to explore long-term changes to replace that? Thank you.
Reform?
Hi, Minister. Naila Ibrahim here from News24. I just wanted to ask a question around the public sector wage bill. In the MTBPS, there is mention of a review with DPSA on things like automatic pay progression and overtime benefits. I'm wanting to just ask National Treasury's plan to clamp down on this and when this is expected to happen. And also, just in terms of early retirement with applications opening last month, what is Treasury's sort of expectations around that in terms of take-up? Has there been any initial sort of take-up which has surprised you from different departments, etc.?
The next year, number 5. Is that number 5?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Lulama, you mean.
Lulama, Maja, SAPC.
Minister, on Eskom, the profit, it's a follow-up on the Eskom question, the profit that has been made for the first time over a decade, but you worried about the debt of municipalities to Eskom. But my question is also, municipalities are owed and larger about by households, a business, as well as government and departments. Don't you think that a government should lead by example, that there should be no government department that is owing municipalities to encourage the culture of payment? Thanks.
Thank you. Over to you, Minister.
The bulk of his questions are above our pay grade. They belong to the DG. DM will answer the law. I'll take the tax credits. He'll take the law if economic growth. The rest is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Melissa. Good morning, everyone. The first question was on the procurement dashboard. So unfortunately, all of you have been in the lockup, so you haven't had a chance to go online and start playing around with the dashboard. But essentially, you will shortly have an opportunity. And what you will find when you go there is you will see that we've taken the BAS data, the basic accounting system data, and that tells us about the payments that provincial government departments and national government departments make. We've combined it with other sources of data, for example, the Central Supplier Database, to tell us something about the suppliers that government is paying. And we've put that, the payments data, together with the suppliers' data to paint a picture of the last few years of which government departments are paying which kinds of suppliers for what. And so this is the first time we've done an integrated procurement database where you can go into, for example, the Eastern Cape Department of Health's budget and click on it and see what kind of payments are being made to and what are the amounts. And you can do that for most provinces and you can do that for most government departments. There are some exclusions, people that are not on BAS, like provincial legislatures, but the bulk of the provinces and the national departments are covered. So for us, it's an enormous step forward in procurement transparency. We'll be updating the dashboard every quarter, and we will be supplementing the dashboard with additional information over time, including areas that are not currently covered by the dashboard, like municipal finance and procurement data. I think the question was, well, will it root out some of the corruption we've seen? Certainly, it'll be a strong mechanism of accountability where we will all be able to see over time who is being paid what, and through the data transparency, we believe that that will have an impact on both the quality of service delivery, but also overall accountability in the ecosystem. There was a question about the ghost workers as well, around 9,000. So what we've done there is that we've worked closely with the revenue service colleagues in terms of the tax data, the confidential and anonymized tax data, using the personnel data that we as the Treasury have, and also with the Department of Home Affairs, the National Population Register. And we've pulled all of that data together to build a profile about who are some of the high-risk cases that we could flag as being potential ghost workers. And we've flagged that on the basis of people that are, for example, getting multiple basic salary payments, people that are recorded as being deceased in the National Population Register or by SARS but are still getting paid. And based on that work, we flagged those 9,000 cases. That work is still ongoing. What we are doing now is, in close collaboration with the Department of Public Service and Administration, we are working on the mechanism to get those employees to verify themselves. And pending how that verification process works, that will then give us an opportunity to eliminate those ghost workers starting next year and then get the savings for the fiscal framework. And this is something that we plan to do on an annual basis. There was some questions about Eskom finances and municipal debt. We make the point in the book that we had about 70 plus municipalities that signed up for the Eskom debt relief program. Only about 24 of those municipalities have had some of their debt written off because they've complied with the conditions of the municipal debt relief program. But the balance of those municipalities have not. And so one of the points we make here is that in working with the Department of Energy and Electricity and Eskom, we are moving towards a distribution agency agreement approach where some of these municipalities will, those that are in the debt relief program but have not been successful at meeting the conditions, will be shifted where Eskom will operate those electricity services on their behalf, precisely to deal with the rising municipal debt so that that does not become a hindrance to Eskom over time, building on the profitability that they showed early this year. Last two questions on my side, automatic pay progression and overtime benefits. The Department of Public Service and Administration did some work that they called a personnel expenditure review. They finalized that work earlier this year, presented that work to Cabinet and elsewhere, and that work talks about the kinds of savings we could get in the wage bill from thinking differently about some of the benefits that are in the public service, including things like rural allowances, commuted overtime, and so on. We're working closely with both the DPSA and the relevant departments, including the Department of Health, to revisit those so that we can have a more efficient wage bill going forward. And then finally, on early retirement and our expectations, the early retirement directive was only issued by the Department of Public Service and Administration on the 15th of October. There are two ways in which early retirement works. For the non-personnel intensive departments, the smaller departments, those departments can incentivize employees to leave on the basis of their own cost and their own wage bill. The larger departments benefit from the allocation that was announced by the minister of just over 5 billion over the next two years. The first department that's taking advantage of that is the Department of Defense, where they have made significant progress and will do so during the course of this year to exit many of their employees so that they can rejuvenate the defense force. And we are still working with some of the other departments and the DTSA assessing their applications so that those funds can be made available to allow them to exit those employees and rejuvenate those departments. I hope that covers all the questions, Minister, you wanted me to deal with. Thank you.
Okay, Diem, your question.
Yes. So if you look at the South African economy, we are characterized by what the World Bank would describe as the middle income trap, where you are in a cycle of low growth and high debt, and debt service costs begins to crowd out your ability to make the right kinds of investments to get out of your cycle. And escaping this rule require a couple of policy decisions which have been taken. The first is on structural reform. So one of the things that characterizes the low growth trap is premature deindustrialization. And that is ultimately to do with energy prices. So by moving to the competitive energy market model, you don't only stabilize supply, but you also stabilize pricing. And that is why in the key messages we spoke about the fact that these structural reforms are happening and we are pushing hard on them, but we do want them to move faster. And we've noted that both in the fiscal risk statement as well amongst other things. So it's important to understand that. That's one of the key mechanisms. So the structural reforms are critically important, but then dealing with debt to escape the low growth trap is absolutely critical. And the fact that we have peaked debt to GDP this year, or we are going to be peaking debt to GDP this year, and we've made the announcement now, is one of the critical mechanisms to get out of the low growth trap, because over time, the less you spend in debt service costs, the more you can invest into both infrastructure and public services as well. So that's the critical thing to understand about where we are on low growth and how we begin to see the initial signs of escaping the low growth trap. Thanks very much.
Just before I answer, no, I'm still going to answer. But before I answer the question on medical credits, let me just, I missed a point when I was answering the endorsement. You will recall that in my statement, one of the things I said, there's a political process I've got to go through. Your president, your cabinet, all of those pieces. So I needed all of that to be done, which I can safely say sitting here, and most of the decision I've taken has got endorsement of the president and cabinet, which is an important point. On the medical credits, I have not made any statement to that effect at all. Let me look for a better phrase. I normally use bad phrases. I have not made such a statement. For me to make such a statement, it must be an argument that says, yes, medical credits now have got to be removed and be convincing. But my worry about this statement is the following, is that if you look at who is paying our PIT, what's keeping our PIT going, is the same group we want to take medical credits away from. It's actually an attack on the middle class. I'm not sure that with no alternative. I'm not saying that we should not be doing medical credits, but once we do that, we must be then what is the alternative? I think that's where we should be going. Interesting, just to add a point to the DG on the procurement thing. If anybody has read the SIA report on Tembisa Hospital, a key feature of how that corruption was functioning was that these junior officials would utilize a loophole in the procurement system And that loophole was anything beyond 500,000, you can just, you don't issue a public tender, you can just ask for 3 quotes. Now, once you ask for 3 quotes, it's the same kind of syndicate. What this system will do will flag that out so that you may be able to see that on time. Lastly, Tululam, I agree with you that government must set an example. And as part of that, Minister Shabisa is developing a memo to cabinet with which we will co-sign, whose intention is to give Treasury the authority that if you don't pay a specific municipality and it's proven, then we take your money and give it to that municipality. There's a process in motion to achieve that objective. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. I'm now going to take the last round of questions in KTAM and then they're going to go to Pretoria. I've noted number one, number two, number three, number four, and number five. Yes, thanks. Does anyone want to miss an out for KTAM? Because it's the last round.
Could you adequately answer your view?
Sorry, the governor didn't answer my question on why he's fixed the tax compliance levels on coconut day at this point in time.
Can we tear you off with the governor so that you tell me if I want? Governor?
It's a fairly basic. Dividends are declared. You'd like to take the money out. What if you have got outstanding taxes? Once that money is gone and the commissioner is having to collect a revenue, the money is gone. And so the requirement here is that we would let the comfort that your tax affairs are in order for that transaction to take place.
Thank you, Governor. Number one.
Thank you, Kokidama and the SMBC. Minister, we note the positive progress that is made by ESCO, but there's a concerning and a gloomy picture being painted about one specific there's a gloomy picture that is being painted about the now minister. The state entity having not submitted financial statements for 4 years. I want to check, Minister, from where you are seated, isn't that concerning? Also, I'm tempted to ask, Minister, do you think Daniel is led by a capable leadership when this specific state entity is in that condition? Having said, we note the progress made by ESCOM. Thank you.
Number two.
Thank you very much, Theo Semhap Koke. Cheesy mother.
Ask the commissioner to help us out, to miss an opportunity to say goodbye. When does the commissioner vote? This has nothing to do with the previous question, Muhammad. Does it seem to where does the commissioner vote? Smart Century of Pike. A sizable delegation in the room. Are we getting ready for the moment?
On that panel.
Minister, on fiscal anchors, could you please give us a sense of what you're thinking? But any lessons for you personally as the finance minister about the evolution of the articulation of the budget, the losses you've taken, the blows? It shows your victories, please. And good.
My answer and listen, Kokedit. No, Minister. That's your 10 yet. Number three.
Hi, excellent issue. This one there, Umabik. Just on the contingency, there was an additional 8.5 billion, which was entirely for the Transnet North and all corridors by my calculations. Can we have more clarity on that? And then where are we on the budget for infrastructure bonds issuance? Because that would probably also added to the BFI.
Number four.
Thank you very much. Kobinen Mokpane from Sunday Times. Minister, I want to go back to the adjustments to the inflation targets. To what extent would you say that things that you might have with international institutions such as Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan might have they formed your Change of Hearts, and to what extent really does that find what they said to you found expression in the final decision? Thank you.
Number five.
Thanks. I've got three Alec Hogg from BizNews. Three very quick questions. The one is the process that how it might have changed because we now have a government of national unity. The second one is a P to name and shame municipalities who are non-compliant. We have, you did say that as far as Eskom's concerned, 10 municipalities, or the 20 actually came to the party, and with the World Bank loans that are going to be made available for infrastructure, it's great that that it's there, but those municipalities who do not comply, a request to name and shame them. And then the third thing is just to give us an understanding when you improve the credit rating of the country, how much it means to the bottom line. In other words, I'm sure DG will be able to give us this. If we were to reduce the interest payment that South Africa has to pay by one percentage point, how much would that wipe off our debt resurfacing every year?
Number six.
Just my two questions. The one on the Madaka Commission, how much money towards that and National Debt of the Data Woman, which is the about long-term debt or replacing the SRD cards.
Can I just check, is there anyone in Cape Town who needs to ask a question before Minister responds? Let me come in.
Good afternoon. I just want to ask on the issue of the holding ETOR. Can we find out exactly how much, if they have paid any amount towards the debt? Because you put the housing, we get much debt.
And then the other one. They are a good pair. They are a good pair.
And then the other one is on the G20. I know this question has surfaced before. How much are we spending as a country for hosting H20?
Thank you. This is the last question. Cape Town, over to Minister and the panel.
Gigi, as usual, your ETOL, how much are they paying? Your 8 billion, your G20 bond issuance, and all of those things. The other questions is Goldman Sachs. To what extent we'll answer that, but answer all the questions and the process of the GNU. And it's not a difficulty. Here's a GNU.
Thank you, Minister. So let me start with, I think Transnet was the first question. So you'll notice that, and I'll deal with the infrastructure bonds at the same time. So you'll notice that the approach that the Minister of Finance has taken with regard to Transnet is to say that clearly YEAR is an entity that has stabilized volumes, but at the same time requires a lot of investment into specific corridors in order to complete the turnaround. And the approach that we've taken is to support that entity on a corridor by corridor or project by project basis, starting with the North Corridor and then with the IMO Corridor, because fixing those two corridors are not only very important for the health of Transnet's balance sheet, but also very important for the fiscal revenue that we do not get because there was extra also not happening. So Transnet came through the budget facility for infrastructure, and those two projects were successfully awarded and then made part of the fiscal framework. What's unique about these projects also is that they unlock, as part of the project structure, they unlock additional funding from the private sector. So the project cost that you see reflected in the fiscal framework is not the full project cost. That is the government's contribution to that work, but there's additional funding that will be raised from the private sector. Transnet has already begun to negotiate with their customers of both those lines to have the shuts so that they can make the changes to those corridors and fix them up. And hopefully we'll see the positive impacts on that from a revenue point of view and from a economic growth point of view. The allocation to Transnet is going via the DBSA. And part of the reason is because the DBSA is going to ensure that those amounts are, the infrastructure fund is going to ensure that those amounts are dispersed in line with project milestones, but also they are going to assist us with the monitoring and the evaluation that allows us to ring fence that funding and then raise infrastructure bonds on the basis of those allocations. And that's the model we are shifting to. We are shifting to a model where infrastructure funds are being delivered via the budget facility for infrastructure, ring-fenced, and then we raise dedicated infrastructure funding against that so that we can support the government's infrastructure drive. And you'll see in the speech, there's a lot of detail on that. So we plan at least 15 billion rand in infrastructure bonds to still be issued this year, and then we'll make that a standard part of our funding program. We can certainly share the non-compliant municipalities, both from a municipal debt relief point of view, the balance between the 24 and the 70-odd, and then also those that the metros that haven't complied with the first round of the metro trading services, because there are 102 that didn't quite meet the criteria for the first round of metro trading services. That detail we can get from the team and just share it with you directly. We normally, I didn't have an opportunity to look for that chart. We normally have a chart in, in the fiscal risk statement on page 51 that tells you exactly this elasticity that you're talking about. So what you'll see there is that we say a one percentage point change in short and long-term interest rates will change the gross loan debt by about 12 billion, and it will change debt service costs by 7.8 billion. And if you look at what's happened over the last 6 or so months, our entire yield curve has for government bonds has shifted downwards. And that has translated into a significant decline in debt service costs, not only this year of around 5 billion, but also over the medium term. And I think that number exceeds something like 20 billion. So the compression in yields this year has brought down our gross borrowing requirement over the medium term. It's brought down our gross debt, but importantly, it's also brought down our debt service costs. And that allows us to, A, the crowding out effect that the DM was talking about earlier, but also that reduction in the yields bring down our cost of capital and therefore interest rates across the economy, spurring investment and household consumption. In terms of the amounts that were requested, apologies, I have them on my phone. Madranga Commission was 147 million. National Dialogue is 132 million for this year. The minister has already said on Gauteng has been a very diligent and good payer. They have been paying, they are making five equal payments on the 30% of the ring-fence debt, and they're paying for backlog maintenance. And they have made all of their payments thus far. If you need the exact total amount, we can pull that out for you. And then the G20 costs amount, I don't unfortunately have, but if someone in the room does, they can quickly shout. Otherwise, we can get it for you. There you heard it from...
It's on the AME, the second page.
Second page of the adjusted estimates of national expenditure. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. I'll make the journalist answer the question. Yeah,
excellent point. To answer this, Goodneil Sexy, just by way of example, the banks had an AGM. I'm invited into this AGM. Some newspapers and media houses ran a story that it was a meeting convened so urgently. I can't remember. It was a payment system. Yeah, they said it was about switch, the payment system, which was not true. I'm just giving an example. Goldman Sachs, we meet them every day. When they come, the first thing they do, they make an appointment, particularly Andrew Matei and everybody. They make an appointment. Can you see? We meet them. They've never convinced. They've met the DM. They've met everybody. They've not convinced us about anything. It's only the Sunday Times that believes that. Because they run this thing. And now even the question is coming from the Sunday Times. They themselves that perpetrated this fiction to the extent that they believe it.
It's true.
You know? There's no such a thing that we were convinced by Goldman Sachs. The process of the GNU. I think I must accept a couple of lessons we've learned in doing this thing. I was telling John now in cabinet, John Stennis, and I was saying, somebody asked me, have you found each other now on the budget? I said, you see that John is not going to walk away before I finish my speech. You know? Because the process we're running is as cumbersome, but it's worth it. I'm coming to your point. First and foremost, we sit here together. We've got our old political parties. We know what the key things we need people we're able to talk to in our parties, so that they should be able to be familiar with what we will be talking about. But in addition to that, all of you know that the president convened a meeting of the GNU leaders. We made a presentation, DG and myself made a presentation even in that meeting of the medium term. So that's part of the consultation process, in addition to the normal cabinet processes. So the GNU has been taken back, I mean, is on speech. That's why I'm saying, I jokingly told John that I know that you're not going to walk away before this. So, but this Goldman Sachs story, Senator, must not stop believing this too.
Thank you, Minister. Colleagues in Pretoria, we have within the time. So what I'm proposing is, this would come to, so just need to talk to them. I'm going to ask a person to only ask one question. We only have about only 15 minutes left. If by any event I'm not able to accommodate your question, please do send it to us. We'll still respond to you by today. You need to just finish off your Cape Town with the commissioner. Thanks.
Hey, yeah.
Your humble Medusa. I have agreed with the minister. So first, let me just say my contract ends in April, unless he fires me before then. But I have agreed, which is why we started earlier, the recruitment for AO such as this next time. I have agreed that minute the recruitment identifies a successor, that we can start about a transition. I hope that answers you, sir. You don't look happy.
So, the timeline? When?
Well, that depends on the recruitment.
Minister, also, you didn't talk about your achievements. I think Sam had asked you that question before I cross over to Victoria.
For your information, I do not have a resignation letter from the commission, so I'm not under stress. To improve the put. Sure.
Sir, can I ask you about your success, your highlights, if you want to talk about them?
I need to write a book about that. I need to write a book about that and say all support with my friend of 35 years, the governor.
The fight isn't.
Come again?
Five, 3%.
He was joking.
There's some. Like it's very bad. If you can sort out the sound, as I give DG the opportunity to clear the issue of denial. Thanks.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say we didn't cover that in our question. I'm not going to talk about it in detail. There is an update on page 54 in the book. It is correct that they have not finalized their annual financial statements because of ongoing audit issues. They had overcome their most immediate liquidity challenges, and so that's been good for them from a liquidity point of view. And we did, of course, give them an initial bailout, which we are dispersing in tranches as they make progress on the turnaround plan. But the rest of the details are on page 54 of the NTBES.
Do you still have confidence under the leadership of Tenno?
That's the Department of Defense. Holder. We're not the shareholder. We're not the shareholder.
The shareholder department should answer that.
No, I'm asking if the minister, because
he doesn't have
point.
Team and two funds. You're stretching it, right? Thanks. Can I go to the share funds and help in surrendering that border? Thanks.
And consummate it as well.
Excuse only for Jade, Mahari, colleague. Yes, I from Mauritius. I just wanted to find out from treasury to literally feel like they have to change the rating trajectory and work this budget.
Thank you, Hemo.
There's no mention in the post office in the documentation that being seen. Could you explain why and what you see with the post office very poor?
Thank you, Suren.
Just to pray up on his question, it seems as if we could forgot about the fact that we met to be baggage in the beginning of the day. It's all rosy, we made the up, we've seen. But going forward, where is the money that Kappa cater for increased standing in the gloves ahead? Will it come from lower inflation target contributing to lower tax, low interest rates? Candy, is it possible that you could reconsider that hike in the future, or are we going to depend on the windfall from our cheeks and higher takings now? Sounds a little bit more by Mahalia budget perspective, having this capacity. And the second question is with regard to the ghost worker that a colleague asked earlier, what the value is. I don't think that question was answered. And just on our features, does this graph fall on the cost?
What is the value of the ghost worker, the cost of those workers? That's still 300.
Thanks. The ghost worker question, you would recall if you look into the chat on the technical Q&A, that question did come up. Can I have Khonse, Naledi, and Venon? Thanks.
Thank you, Tara, from Sikwaya. So in the policy statement, the people that say that SARS had the paid additional skills to address complex cases for improvement on
what? SARS has addressed additional skills to deal with complex tax cases.
Naledi?
Naledi Mnuruk, SABC. My question is for the governor. Can governor just crystallize the point about the 1% tolerance then? What exactly does that mean? And how will it be instituted? Because I see you told me about it may come in with an inflation shock. So can you just explain how that would actually work in Bilton, and perhaps maybe you can extend the fence to which the 3% target will result in consumption spending or growth supported by consumption spending as opposed to Lady Dominic saying, and the impact it will have on ribbon collisions in the short term as stated.
Thank you. Can I have Benon and then Antonetti, the last one from Pretoria?
I actually changed my mind about the question, but I may as well take a flyer on the VAT. Is the VAT increase off the table now? What is the likelihood of it happening come the 2026 budget announcements, given that there has been a bit of an overrun in terms of revenue collection?
Thanks, Antoinette.
Thank you. I want to ask the DG, with regards to the distribution IGT agreements that I seek the Minister Treasury in our support, as Treasury looked at the results of the first two distribution IGT agreements, and if you have, are you satisfied with that? I mean, moving to that, so far that all passes has been very applied. What factors need to make it more transparent?
Thanks, Antoinette. I'm now going to give an opportunity to the panel to respond, to lead to Barry, the DG.
It's all DG questions. Additional skills. So, remind me if there are any questions that I don't cover. The value of the ghost workers, it's very difficult to tell you, to give you a number now, mainly because the cases that we flagged still need to be authenticated. And of course, each of those individual cases earn different salaries and they are on different notches and so on. So once we've done further verification of those flagged cases, we'll be able to give a more accurate answer. And hopefully we could provide an update at the time of the budget. And as I said, this is something we'll be doing on an ongoing basis. And then to clarify, yes, the Ghost Worker Project is part of the broader Targeted and Responsible Savings Initiative, which is about identifying potential for spending efficiencies, closing down non-performing programs, and so on. I think we mentioned earlier that we've identified savings relating to TARs of 6.7 billion over the medium term. One through the scaling down of a non-performing program, which is the public transport network grant. And the other was about the work that we've done around eliminating social grant fraud that will contribute about 3 billion of that over the next few years. And further announcements will follow at the time on the budget. In terms of the distribution agency agreement, we've only just aligned with the Department of Energy and Electricity and Eskom on this particular model. And what we will be doing starting after the NDBPS is rolling that out with those municipalities. So again, that's an area that we can provide an update on at the time of the budget. Minister, would you like me to deal with SARPUP or you post office, or do you want to come in on the post office?
Is it hot, Phil?
I'll leave it to you.
Okay. So SARPUP is fine. And then the final question was around office. Have we done enough to change the ratings?
Look, I think there's a couple of points to make here. I think one is that it was very important for the minister to ensure that debt to GDP stabilizes this year as per our commitment over the last 2 years. And it's not easy to stabilize debt to GDP in an environment where nominal GDP is revised downwards, which is what happened this year. So that demonstrates the seriousness of our commitment to achieving our fiscal targets as a mechanism to restore fiscal credibility. The same for the primary surplus. It's our third consecutive year of doing something that is globally a basic standard of fiscal sustainability, which is that your revenue has to exceed your non-interest expenditure. We've managed to do that for 3 years in a row. And we will have a primary surplus of close to 2% in 2 years' time. And I think these are achievements that many people thought even just a year ago were completely unachievable and unthinkable. And I think at some point, the rating agencies will have to pay attention to that. And at some point, there'll have to be an acknowledgement. There's already an acknowledgement in the market if you look at our bond yields and how that has come down and what that means for the debt service costs and the overall debt burden and the crowding out effects. Thank you, Wies.
Thank you very much. You see, when inflation walks through the door,
public trust jumps out through the window and the money becomes worthless. And so you ask the question of how a lower target is going to support consumption. The lowering of the target is one thing. Achieving it is another. And so by lowering the target and tasking the Reserve Bank with achieving that target, what you are actually doing is that you are protecting the value of money. You are enabling the rand to go an extra mile in terms of the basket of goods and services that it can actually purchase. And so our calculations estimates are that the lowering of the target and the anchoring of the actual expectations at the target would actually be increasing real disposable income. So that is the first point to know. And that is in the main for the public. And bear in mind that household consumption expenditure is just over 60% of GDP. So by increasing the buying power of money through the lowering of the target and the lowering of inflation, and thus making South Africa to be a low inflation economy, makes decision making in this economy in terms of investment and consumption predictable. And so the government is also an important player here. And so lower inflation also enhances government spending. It increases the real spending power of government expenditure. Now, the tolerance band of 1%, there are basically two inflation targeting regimes. You could have a band, which is what we have had for a very long time, or you could have a point. Now, the thing about the point is that you must understand that figures get revised, if not and again. And you must also understand that you can't be as precise. And the question comes, are you as aggressive in dealing with the deviation from target when you are above target and when you are below target? Are you seen in other ways as being symmetric? What the tolerance band does for us is that it says you are aiming for 3. If you are deviating and you are within these margins, you are okay. But there is another aspect. And that aspect has to do with the fact that our workhorse model, the Kochadi projection model, does not work on a range. It works on a point. So it's one of the important variables in the Kochadi projection model has to do with the deviation of the actual inflation from the target. That gap is what feeds into the deliberations in setting out what policy, monetary policy, evolves over a period of time. That's the first aspect. The second aspect, which is a very important, is that whether you are targeting 4.5%, 6%, or 3%, there will always be shocks. And when a shock takes place, the monetary authority needs to explain what its understanding of the nature of the shock is and what its reaction function is going to be. And so, in central bank lingo, we would say, if the shock is of a temporary nature, we look through it. In other words, you do not adjust policy just because you have had a sudden surge in food prices or a sudden surge in oil prices. You wait for what we call second round effects, meaning, does that shock lead to other prices in the economy generally rising? And so, in the bank, we use a number of matrix where we are able to strip out those volatile items and see where actual inflation pressures are, whether we use super core or whether we use the trimmed mean. That is what we do in. And so the tolerance band just adds to the flexibility that a flexible inflation targeter is expected to conduct policy.
Thank you, Governor Minister.
Oh, Commissioner. What was it?
Skills.
Thank you. Yes. Just on the skills of additional money, as we learned about it, we initially thought we would just increase at the lower end, but as we learned and worked through the complexities, we've now increased from 1,500, as I said, the low value less complex debt to about 2,400. But we have now directed, we've seen an increase in 35% of civil judgments, which means that we also need to supplement that with a different range of skills. So we have 81, which we hoping to ramp up to 250, which will include more complex debt collectors, legal attorneys, some litigation attorneys and legal collectors. We're issuing more writs of execution. So the kind of work requires more complex skills. And so we've shifted some of the resource allocation towards hiring those skills and hope in the next few months to ramp it up from 81 to 250. We've also introduced a, working with the RCBs, a accelerated process for taxpayers through the practitioners to apply for debt compromises, just to also churn out a higher level than what we traditionally would. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I mean, the post office. No. No. The post office. I don't know any of you now think that there's a post office which operates like ours in this digital age. Somebody who's going to collect letters and submit them and with a postman going into, with a bag, going street by street. That kind of post office does not exist. The debate we're having, we had a meeting even yesterday with our colleagues from the Department of Communication and Digital Technologies, is they want a $3 billion. We said, okay, but what kind of post office are we thinking about? So that we know that really we're creating an institution which is going to survive in the future. Here's our take. If you look at DHL, it used to be a post office. Fed Express, it used to be a post office. They've changed completely their model. We then made a proposition to our colleagues that they must also, for us to talk business, they must tell us what new business model they are talking about so that we know we're going to have a post office of the future rather than give them a $3 billion now and next financial year they need another $3 billion. So, they will be issuing, in to my understanding, expression of interest for people who want to partner with them to create what they call a post office of the future. What form it will take, it will depend on the kind of proposals they're going to get from when they do that request. Yeah, the is that off the table? Oh, Ebo. No, it's off the table, Makabanogongo. No, it's off the table.
It's under the table.
Eh?
It's under the table.
You know, yeah. Commissioner says it's under the table. Whichever formulation is okay. Yeah?
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, colleagues. We've now come to the end of the briefing.
No, I didn't tell Claire.
Okay.
She said they wrote a piece. I'm saying, addition, why I've got to agree on this 1%. They wrote a piece they said my budget was done. And the reason it was done is because I did not announce the inflation targeting in their, when they write in the PR. So I don't want my budget to be done again, Claire.
Thank you very much, Minister, and the panel. You may now leave the room. May I ask everybody to be seated up until the panel of the minister leaves. Pretoria, Moilo, Babai, Saudis, Munani. Thank you very much for your cooperation.